Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 97. My name is John. I am not your rolling wheels. I am the highway. I am not your carpet ride. I am the sky. There's a Peanuts comic strip, one of the Sunday editions, with Schroeder preparing to play at his piano while Snoopy stands on top of it with a violin. Lucy, as usual, is sitting down and leaning against the other side. Schroeder and Snoopy begin to play, and they really get into the song. Schroeder continues to play while Snoopy dances, and by this time, Lucy has turned around to watch. Snoopy resumes playing, and soon after, the song ends. The final panel has both Snoopy and Schroeder looking at Lucy, who simply asks, "But is it art?" I love subtle humor like that. It also leads to a good question. What is art? There's a particular definition that I've run across every so often over the years, and each time I read it or hear it, I get a little perturbed. I'm not really sure why. I suppose that's why I'm opening the podcast with it, letting it inspire my thoughts. Earlier this month, I ran across that definition of art yet again, this time in the Twitter feed of Neil deGrasse Tyson. Oh, well, if it's Neil deGrasse Tyson, it must be right. I mean, that's the consensus, isn't it? If a smart person says it, it must be correct. Yeah, I might as well just end the podcast here. Oh, wait. Last podcast, I talked in part about how smart people aren't always right. So I'll keep going. His tweet read, quote, "Bears repeating, creativity that satisfies and affirms your worldview is entertainment. Creativity that challenges and disrupts your worldview is art," end quote. Can't say I agree with that. And I am picking on him just a little bit because this was a tweet from a highly celebrated smart dude. But as I said, he is hardly the first person to present this definition or some close variation of it. Here's what irks me about it. What if a piece, when it was created, challenged and disrupted worldviews, but over time has come to only satisfy and affirm worldviews? I think it's fair to say that Da Vinci's Mona Lisa and Michelangelo's David are universally accepted and therefore satisfy and affirm worldviews rather than challenge or disrupt. Is it acceptable that they were once challenging and disruptive? Or, because times have changed, are those examples of creativity no longer art? Shall we move them from the museums where they are displayed and instead showcase them at a place for entertainment like Disneyland? Does it have to challenge and disrupt everyone's worldview? If 100 people are viewing a piece of creativity, and it challenges and disrupts the worldview of one person, but merely satisfies and affirms the worldview of the other 99, is the creativity entertainment or art? Is it art because it challenged and disrupted at least one person? If one person isn't enough, what is the smallest sample needed to challenge and disrupt in order to qualify as art? What percentage of people need to be satisfied and affirmed for it to be mere entertainment? Keeping Up with the Kardashians has been the focus of a lot of animosity from a large section of society. Quite a few people struggle to understand why it is so popular, to the point where they take time to contemplate and comment on it at length. Is that not challenging and disrupting people's worldviews? Doesn't that mean that by this definition, Keeping Up with the Kardashians qualifies as performance art? I'll let you in on a little secret. When I was growing up on Saturday afternoons, sometimes my mom would tune into PBS so we could watch one of Bob Ross's 30-minute painting shows. Now, as a little kid, I would see paintings and I would wonder how difficult it must be to make them. Then I watched Bob Ross, and I found that the basics, of oil painting at least, were actually pretty easy. Once you knew a few basic strokes and techniques, anyone could paint a really good landscape. A little over a year ago, Netflix added 52 episodes of Bob Ross's Joy of Painting series. I happily watched them almost every work night in order to relax enough to go to sleep. Every once in a while, I think to myself that I should go to the art store, buy all the supplies, and start painting. Well, damn. That means his work satisfies and affirms my worldview when I watch it almost every night, but also inspires me to take up painting, which would definitely disrupt and challenge my worldview. So which is it? Entertainment or art? Can it be both? The vaunted scientist definition certainly made it seem like there was a clear division between the two. And what about music? Sometimes when I'm struggling with writing this podcast, I'll listen to classical music because it helps open up my mental creativity. Well, shit, that seems to be more in line with satisfying and affirming. Mozart is not art, since it doesn't challenge or disrupt. And disrupt has such a negative connotation. Disruption, by definition, I mean, we are talking about defining things here. Disruption, by definition, means a change caused by a disturbance or a problem to drastically alter or destroy the structure of something. Does that mean art must cause a disturbance or a problem within its viewer? Does that mean art must alter or destroy? According to Neil deGrasse Tyson, it does. Does the disruption have to be caused by a disturbance? What if it doesn't disturb so much as annoy? What if it just makes you roll your eyes and wish you were watching something more enjoyable, like, I don't know, a live autopsy? Help me out here. I'm trying to figure out how to define interpretive dance. If you are purposely creating something in order to drastically alter or destroy another person's worldview, isn't that malicious? If your worldview brings you peace and happiness, which you want to share with others, wouldn't an artist attempting the purposeful destruction of your peaceful, happy worldview be an act of evil? Here's something to consider. This podcast is attempting to challenge and disrupt the worldview of collectivists. This podcast is art, motherfuckers. Last year, Gina and I went on a cruise for our anniversary. We take the week of our anniversary off every year and go on vacation to celebrate. On the cruise, I absolutely fell in love with the modern impressionist work of Daniel Wall. Gina will tell you, the more colorful something is, the more I like it. And his work is a kaleidoscope of gorgeous, vibrant colors. I mean, there was no way in hell I was going to shell out thousands of dollars for it because I have way too much sense. But my God, I was like Cameron Frye. Foreshadowing. I just gazed in wonder at his work. And it brought joy to my heart. It made my spirit soar. That may sound silly or corny to some, but it's true. If you go by Neil deGrasse Tyson's definition, I wasn't looking at art. I was merely entertaining myself. The rigidity of the definition is bad enough. It discounts all the efforts artists put forth to create beauty. It glamorizes indiscriminate demolition for demolition's sake and mocks uplifting creativity. It ignores the ever-shifting perspectives of what is popular culture and what is avant-garde. In other words, it's a damn poor definition of art. The only thing I learned from reading this definition is that you cannot define art. I don't remember if I used this example before in my podcast. I know I planned to, but I can't remember if it made the final edit. What color is green? Green is my favorite color, probably because Green Lantern is my favorite superhero from my youth. But if you close your eyes and you imagine green, what does it look like? Is it the green you see in a red oak leaf? Or the green of Bermuda grass? Is it the green of Mexican sage? Or the green of a pine tree? It's kind of funny to me that for so long I've used that as a mental exercise when I recently ran across another Peanuts cartoon. I've been reading a lot of them lately. This one with Lucy and Charlie Brown gazing at the ground around them. And Charlie Brown says, "Pretty soon, Lucy, all the grass will be turning green." Lucy turns to him and asks, "Light green, dark green, or medium green?" Charlie Brown stares blankly as she continues, "Yellow green, blue green, or lime green? Kelly green, forest green, Hunter's green, jade green, apple green, or olive green?" Charlie Brown has now walked away from her. She shouts to him, "Evergreen, wintergreen, herb green, or graham green?" As Charlie Brown leans against the wall, groaning, "Oh, good grief." The best part about reading that comic is I've unknowingly used it as an example of how you cannot always clearly define things. Perhaps even you shouldn't. I guess it should be unsurprising for a person of science to put forth such an inflexible definition of art. What's the big deal about defining things that can't or shouldn't be defined? I suppose it's human nature to want to define things. Many people have an incessant need for definitions, as if they can't grasp the concept of something until they have properly compartmentalized it. Ironically, clearly defining ambiguous things are often done in order to support and affirm certain people's worldviews. There's another motivation for such people to insist on a clear definition of things that can't or shouldn't be narrowly defined. In past podcasts, I've talked a great deal about the definition of marriage. Let me hit the highlights. Over the entirety of known human history, 75% of all civilizations have practiced some form of polygamy. Almost always polygyny, but on rare occasions, polyandry. That means, historically speaking, polygamy is traditional marriage. monogamy is a fairly recent societal development. Additionally, despite puritanical efforts to deny and prohibit, homosexuality and bisexuality exists. And I always have to include that there is a faction in the homosexual community who believe that bisexual males don't really exist and are just going through a phase denying their homosexuality. Which, as a bisexual male, I find both ironic and offensive. Anyway, polygamy is far more common historically. Homosexuality and bisexuality are natural human states. So, for someone to demand everyone conform to heteromonogamy as the definition of marriage is intellectually vacant. The sweet irony in our society is that the people who usually insist on a rigid definition of marriage are Christians. Worldwide, there are over 40,000 Christian denominations. In other words, 40,000 different definitions of Christianity. I've joked for years that I'll allow Christians to define marriage if the gay community gets to define Christianity. If your personal definition of marriage is heteromonogamy, go for it. However, don't you dare try to force it on me, just like I won't try to force my definition of marriage on you. So why require a definition of marriage at all? Anything other than their narrow vision is a threat to their morality. Their morality has enjoyed extensive control for quite some time. Challenging the definition challenges their control. So, you say, I must have been quite happy when gay marriage was legalized. No, I wasn't. And I'll explain why in a few minutes. But first, did you hear free-range parenting is now legal in Utah? What the fuck is that? Okay. Free-range parenting is defined as the concept of raising children in the spirit of encouraging them to function independently and with little parental supervision, in accordance of their age and development, and with a reasonable acceptance of realistic personal risks. At least, that's what it's known as now, free-range parenting. To me, it's known as parenting. From my perspective, this style known as free-range parenting was just known as parenting for many, many generations before. It's only in recent years things have changed. See, when I was a kid, especially during the summer, I would let my parents know in the morning that I was going to a friend's house. They would tell me to be back by dinner time. I would leave my house unsupervised. I'd go to my friend's house, and we would meet up with other friends and go off together without any adult supervision. We'd ride bikes, go to playgrounds, whatever you could think of. Sometimes during the summer, I would ride the bus to work with my mom, who at that time worked in downtown San Antonio, just a couple blocks away from the Alamo. She'd give me a couple of dollars, because things were much cheaper almost 40 years ago, offer a few suggestions of things to do, and remind me to come back to her office so we could have lunch together, and then send me on my way. Folks, I'm talking about doing these things when I'm 8 and 9 years old. Can you imagine that being done today? Letting your child run around a major city unsupervised would get you thrown in jail, because the prevailing opinion in today's society is that is child neglect. But not everybody feels that way. There are some who believe that if the parents believe their children have the mental and emotional maturity, they should be allowed to go off unsupervised and do normal childhood activities. The prevailing opinion that children must be supervised for their protection has become so commonplace in recent years that some parents have been fined or arrested for allowing their child to walk unsupervised to a playground less than a quarter mile away because something might have happened. It didn't, but it might have. Although such incidents happened elsewhere, the state of Utah decided to take proactive action and became the first state to legalize what used to be the commonly accepted definition of parenting and is now known as free-range parenting. What does it mean to be a parent? What's the definition? Is parenting letting your child go off on their own if you feel they can handle it? Or is parenting constantly keeping visual contact to protect them from any possible threat? Or is it something else altogether? That's the thing. There is no answer. Because correct parenting to you is different from what it is to me. So who am I to tell you how to parent, or vice versa? Regardless, it's now legal in Utah for a parent to make the same determination that my mother had the assumed freedom to do nearly four decades ago. That's a good thing, right? No, it's not. The government legalizing free-range parenting is not good news. Just like the government legalizing gay marriage was not good news. Wait, what? Why would you say something like that, John, when you believe in a person's right to enter into a private contract with the person or persons they love, regardless of gender? Why would you say something like that when you believe in a person's right to raise their children how they see fit? Because government controls the definition of parenting. And government controls the definition of marriage. Just like everybody cheered when government legalized gay marriage, now there are those who cheer for government legalizing how they wish to raise their children. Understand this. They are not giving us freedom. We are paying a ransom to them with our votes and our obedience in exchange for being allowed to do what we should have the automatic freedom to do anyway. That's why neither government legalization of gay marriage or free-range parenting is good news. Government still controls the definition. And what they set as a definition today, they will change tomorrow if we don't bow down and kiss the ring. If it pleases the masters, may we be allowed to raise our children in a manner not supported by the bureaucracy? If it pleases the masters, may I enter into a private contract with the people I love? If government didn't control your life, you wouldn't have to ask. None of us should be running to the government asking for permission to exercise our natural rights. We should be saying, "How dare you tell me how to raise children? How dare you tell me who I may marry?" Prove to me that somebody's natural rights are being violated, and then we can discuss when, where, and how government should intervene. Otherwise, government has no right to define how an individual chooses to live his or her life. So long as you are not violating the natural rights of others, you should do whatever the hell you want. No person, group, or society should force their definition of morality onto you. You give others the right to define your life, you give away your life. That may be fine for some people. I've known a lot of Christians over the course of my lifetime who gave their life to Jesus. And if you want to voluntarily give yourself over to another person, group, or belief, then that is your choice. However, when so many of you get together to persuade government to force your morality on the rest of us and try to manipulate that force to make people like me curtail our freedom, I will oppose you. See last podcast for a more in-depth discussion. You think your massive show of force will bully us into changing the definition of the Second Amendment, our natural right to defend ourselves? How brave of you to march in the streets and bloviate on how good people should surrender their natural rights to you. How brave for the politician who goes to the rally surrounded by protectors with firearms to tell the rest of us how we must give up our right to protect ourselves as we see fit. How brave of you to clench your fist in the air to remind us that if we don't follow along, the fist will come for us. Maybe it's time I revisited the Clan of the Fist podcast from a few years back. First the Patriot Act, now this. Change fueled by fear favors fascism. I do not stand for my rights today because I fear the government will march down my street tomorrow. I stand for my natural rights today so that government will not march down the street in a generation. Aren't you the self-proclaimed representatives of the future? Look who's learned already to lead a show of force down city streets. Look who's already made demands and expectations of anyone who opposes them. Let's not forget that the same powers that be you demand step in to decrease our natural right to self-defense are the ones who made you defenseless targets in their government-run gun-free zones. You are playing right into the fascist game. That cancerous ideology will devour you and use you to destroy the precious bits of liberty we have remaining. Who are you to define how anyone else may defend themselves from any threat they perceive? You will sell out the freedoms of the people of this country for your illusion of safety. And that is why the agents of force want to control definitions. This is what marriage must be. This is what parenting must be. This is what self-defense must be. Force the definition. Force compliance. Reduce individuality. And force minds to be closed. And the next thing you know, the definition of marriage is heteromonogamy. The definition of parenting is helicopter parent. And the definition of self-defense is cowering weaponless in the corner, hoping the police get there before the bad man finds you. This is why respect of individuality is so important. You must respect the right of others to live their life on their terms. Their definition, if you will. That's why some things shouldn't be defined, because you have to discover what they mean for yourself. I watched one of my favorite movies recently, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And while I was watching it, something occurred to me. Ed Rooney is government. He ineptly bungles around trying to force everyone to conform to his definition of life, yet self-righteously violates his own rules. School is the bureaucracy. Childish, sad, and stupid. Jeannie Bueller, the sister, is the typical American voter, who is blindly bought into Rooney's definition and fanatically resents anyone who doesn't fall into lockstep. She, ironically, spends almost the entire movie complaining to anyone who will listen about her brother's nonconformity while self-righteously ignoring her own indiscretions, just like Rooney. Cameron is the non-voter, who knows something is wrong with his world, but can't or won't do anything about it. He'd just rather stay in bed all day, feigning sickness and feeling sorry for himself. Ferris, of course, is the individual. He recognizes the idiocy of the system and seeks to break free and live life on his terms. And while he doesn't always do the right thing, and some of his actions lead to damage, he has a positive influence on everyone who views him with an open mind. Oh, and Sloan? Sloan is Liberty. She's the one who's worth defying authority for. She's the inspiration to embrace the craziness and chaos of life. Sloan is freedom. And when it comes to freedom, you can never go too far. So what are you going to do? Let Ed Rooney control the definition and thereby control your life? This is what art is. Conform. This is what marriage is. Conform. This is what self-defense is. Conform. Maybe what I should be asking is, how will you define yourself? You're going to be Jeannie Bueller and waste your life away by sticking your nose into other people's business? Why should he get to marry another man? Why should he get to send his child to a playground alone? Why should he get to own an assault rifle? Maybe you're going to be like Cameron. Hey, you're not dying. You just can't think of anything good to do. Or are you going to be like Ferris? How can anyone expect to conform to the bureaucracy with a life like this? Would you prefer to slog through conformity or be a fry cook on Venus? How will you define yourself when you stare deeply at a Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jetée? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.